Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. It is my privilege and honor to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel, who was in the U.S. Senate from Alaska from 1969, when I was born, to 1981. During which period he actually was an opponent of war in the outdated sense of doing things to try to end the war that he said he opposed. He tried to end the draft. He introduced the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record. Mike Gravel was a candidate, a Democratic candidate for president for the nomination in 2008. He is also a well-known advocate of direct democracy and the national initiative, and might have some thoughts on the recent ballot initiative successes in the United States if we have time for it. But we have pressing and important matters at hand. Mike Gravel, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you for having me.
It is wonderful to have you. I want to talk about what you and others are doing to try to get Senator Udall to do something right in the United States Senate right now. But as background, could you review for us what you did to make the Pentagon Papers public?
Very good. Well, first off, let me go even back to the Founding Fathers on this particular subject, the Speech and Debate Clause. We look upon the legislature as a legislative body. Madison and Jefferson both felt that the informative part of the responsibilities of elected officials trumped the legislative side. And it makes sense. It's important for the constituency of the nation to know what the government is doing. And so just legislating, making laws, does not necessarily inform the people. So the duty that representatives and senators have is to inform the people what they are doing, so and what the government is doing, the executive, which is separate from the Congress, so the people can react, and so that you can have a functioning democracy. And so I don't think people appreciate it. Certainly the members of Congress don't appreciate it, that their first duty is to inform people as to what the government is doing. Now, with respect to what I did back in 1971, when I was in a course of a filibuster to force the end of the draft, when I got a call, it was from Dan Ellsberg. I didn't know it was Dan Ellsberg at the time, because the whole world and the U.S. government was looking for Dan Ellsberg to try and arrest him when he was living in plain sight in Cambridge at a motel with his wife, Pat. He asked if I would use the Pentagon Papers as part of my filibuster, and I said, of course I would, and immediately hung up. And he made arrangements through Ben Bagdikian, the editor at the Post, Washington Post, to get the papers to me. They got me the papers, and I sought legal counsel from three young men who weren't over 30, and about how to handle this. I did not know, I'm not an attorney, and I did not know the consequences of releasing the papers officially. And so I was frightened, and I had the papers for 3 days working to read them and be acquainted with them, and didn't get much sleep. And so I was really exhausted when I took the papers to the floor on the afternoon, Tuesday afternoon of before the end of the month, with the hope of reading the papers into the record, taking a day and a half, because that would force, by reading the papers, that would force the ending of the draft in the United States, which subsequently happened, and then it was reinstated in September. And Nixon had promised that he would end the draft in 73, which of course he did. He since recanted in one of his memoirs, saying that that was the worst decision he ever made. Well, it was forced on him, and he didn't have much choice. But with the release of the papers, I laid on a quorum call. It was 5 o'clock, so that and you lay, you do a quorum call, so you want to kill time. And I wanted to permit the members of the staff of the Senate to make arrangements for the evening, since I was going to be filibustering all night. When I tried to pull the quorum call back by asking unanimous consent, it was objected to by Robert Griffin, the Republican whip, and that just froze me in position that I couldn't do anything on the floor. Fortunately, these young attorneys back at the office came up with Plan B, and that was that based upon the experience of the House Un-American Activities Committee, I could use my committee, and the only chairmanship I had was the Subcommittee on Buildings and Grounds of the Public Works Committee. I could use my committee to hold a hearing on the subject of the Pentagon Papers, or rather on the subject of lack of money to build federal buildings around the country. And so what we did is we typed up the notices, put them under the doors of the committee members. By this time it was midnight, and a Congressman Dove from New York, very much of a peacenik, came forward and offered testimony to the committee. And so I convened the committee. I asked him what he wanted. He wanted a federal building in his district. I said, well, we don't have the money to build any federal buildings, and the reason why we don't have the money is because we're mired down in war in Southeast Asia, and I'd like to read you some of the history of how we got into this mess. And so I proceeded to read the Pentagon Papers and broke down sobbing with fatigue and fear, actually. And so then I composed myself and made a unanimous consent to put the papers into the record, and gaveled it since I was the only one there, and it passed. And then we retreated back to my offices, and we copied the papers and handed them to a pool of media people outside the door while we copied them, and then they took the papers and copied them again, and passed the papers out to the various media interests. Now, the key thing to understand is that by putting it in a record, that was fine. It would have never gone anywhere because the Senate would not have printed the record, and it would not have been physically released to the public. So by our printing, copying the papers, and releasing them to a pool of reporters are what permitted the distribution of the Pentagon Papers officially. Since I was a senator, I was doing it under a constitutional mandate, and there's nothing. And of course, the issue went to the Supreme Court, and the court ruled unanimously, and I want to emphasize that, unanimously, that I could release the papers as I did within the confines of the Senate. Five of them disagreed with the fact that I published the papers with Beacon Press in a couple of months after that event. And so for that, I could have been prosecuted. But by then, this was now in 1972, in June, and Watergate was just beginning to get some traction. And so Nixon chose not to prosecute me or Beacon Press or Dr. Rotberg. Now, if I could give a comparison to the situation that exists today with Udall, Mark Udall.
Sure.
First off, well, let me point out that earlier in the year, or maybe it was last year, I was told that Ron Wyden wanted to get a hold of me and talk about this. And I told the staff person, fine, he can call me, and I gave him the phone numbers. Well, Ron never did, and I wondered why. And, of course, both Ron Wyden and Udall were making I would say very casual remarks that what they knew in the committee, the Feinstein's committee, that they couldn't release it, or they were alluding to the fact of the surveillance by NSA. And of course, the actions, the courageous and outstanding actions of Snowden.
Yes, Edward Snowden.
Edward Snowden mooted their innuendos, because he did release everything about it and then some. In fact, did a much better job than they would have done releasing it, for sure. But Ron never got back to me, and I wondered why. And then now, with a lot of pressure on Udall to get a hold of me, or me to get a hold of him, and I'm prepared to do that, and so that I could give him some advice as to how to do what I did. But his situation is different. Now, keep in mind, the speech and debate clause is just that. It's speech and debate. Notice you don't have to have something put in the record. You can just speak it. Now, in this particular case, the report, the torture report, and incidentally, the release of this torture report is extremely important. It goes to the moral basis of the American culture. Torturing people is beyond the pale with respect to human beings, and that we have wantonly, through the CIA, tortured people. And I'll give you one example. You think, and I have a background in intelligence, and I'll tell you that you don't get good intelligence from torture. But what was it, Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, who was apparently the mastermind behind 9/11.
Who was not?
He's been.
Who was not questioned for this report? Among others,
pardon me.
Who among others is not included in the report? I mean, he was not contacted, not asked anything in preparation for this report. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But what the point I was trying to make was that he was waterboarded more than 100 times.
Yes.
Now, do you think they got any information from him on the 99th waterboarding? What the waterboarding of, at this level of numbers, is nothing but sheer torture. It got nothing to do with collecting intelligence. It's vengeance, spiteful, sadistic torture. That's what our American employees were doing. And the American people should know that, because until you know that, you can't react morally to this terrible situation. So that's the case we see today, is that these torture reports have got to be released. Now, is the machinations, the political machinations with Feinstein and others on the committee to get the information out. Will it get out? I think people have concluded that the best likelihood is for Udall, since he lost the election. He's got nothing at risk because of the Pentagon, the Pentagon Papers. He has nothing at risk other than the peer pressure and losing respect from people like McCain and others who would probably call him a traitor for doing that. Now, but what he could do, and I know many of my friends that I've talked about it say that this is not possible. Well, it is possible. If he can get his hands on the papers, that's what's the difficult part. If he can physically get his hands on the papers, he can write a press release on top of the papers and take it up to the press gallery and hand out the Pentagon and hand out the torture report. The torture report is already an item of record within the committee, within Feinstein's committee. And since it's already of record, we don't have to establish that. And the reason why we know it's of record, because they've done some doctoring, cutting out some names or putting false names on it, so that you wouldn't recognize some of the individuals who have done these terrible things.
So when we say put it into the congressional record, that's a mistake. It already is in the congressional record?
Of course it's in the congressional record. No, think that the congressional record is just what they publish.
Well,
daily record of the speaking on the floor. But all of the documents that are in the hands of the chamber, the committee, the subcommittees, that's the record. That's the Senate record. Whether it's published publicly or not is beside the point. And so the point that I'm making is, and that's the reason why when you go back historically and you find out that Tom Jefferson and James Madison and Wilson all believed that the function of a representative was first and foremost to release information to the people about what the government is doing. And that makes sense, because unless you inform the people what the government's doing, the people will never be able to react positively or negatively to the actions of government. And they would thereby destroy democracy. The key to democracy is an informed electorate. And so the first and foremost task of a member of Congress is to inform the electorate as to what the government is doing. So when we see something as dastardly as this being done by the government, we need to have somebody there who will... it's not courage at this point, because there's no risk. What the risk is that, well, my colleagues may think ill of me if I violate the rules of the committee or the subcommittee. They are only rules.
We have a considerably different Supreme Court does not present any risk to your mind.
No, because they would have to overrule a unanimous ruling.
They've done it. They have done it.
I know, but here too, that would, as far as Udall's concerned, if they were to overturn it, then what they're going to do? He's no longer in the Senate. They can't be censured. In fact, part of the argument in my case was that I could have been punished by censure, but because Mansfield stopped it, I wasn't punished by censure. But here again, the duty to make known to the American public without redaction the redaction that the CIA wants, they just want to cover everybody's behind, and everybody in the government's complicit in this. This didn't happen just at the torture level. It happened at the presidential level. It happened at the vice presidential level and at the Secretary of Defense level at the head of the CIA. They're all complicit in this. And that's the tragedy, that the American public just does not have a way to react to this horrible, immoral conduct by our elected officials.
We are speaking with former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel, who made the Pentagon Papers officially and entirely public about what Senator Mark Udall might do with the torture report. I've heard Senator Gravel some proposals from various people on how this might be done, and arguments that the closer it is to legislation, the safer it is, and he should introduce it as part of the preliminary remarks of a piece of legislation, of a bill that he introduces. You seem to think that it could just be a press release. It doesn't make any difference. As long as he's a senator and he's speaking, it's covered. Very much so.
And if this other strategy you're talking about won't work. It won't work, because if he turns around and introduces it into the Senate record on the floor, and if they don't print it, how's it going to get out?
Well, then he has to do a press release, but it would be a press release that he had done in his official capacity.
Well, but he could write a press release outlining the moral ramifications of denying this information to the people, put it on the report, and hand it out. Just that simple. You see, what happens is, by playing around with the rules to try and get some kind of silly coverage towards the process, you're talking about the Senate leadership will to a man, plus with the White House, will to a man thwart any effort you try to do it. So just do it. Just do it.
So let me ask you this. When you introduced the Pentagon Papers, you, a few years later, ran for re-election and were re-elected. You were not, as far as I know, there was no attempt made on your life. You were not made unpopular. You were not driven out of Washington, at least not yet. Everyone assumes that the only one who could do this thing now, in this day and age, is someone who's leaving town. Why is that?
Well, because they're trying to say that there's safety in the fact that he can leave town. He can do this and leave town.
And if he doesn't, what happens?
I don't think anything happens.
So we have 435 people to address these recommendation to, not one.
Well, but you see...
I'm sorry, 535.
Yeah, keep in mind now that most of those 535 people don't know anything about the torture report other than what they read in the newspaper. So they are going to be as incensed as the general public by having this information. There'll be a lot of people that will be sustaining Udall if he does this.
But there are a couple of dozen who have had their hands on the thing, at least, correct?
Yeah, and they didn't do anything about it because they don't see any obligation to the general public. These political persons who are in the Congress do not understand their responsibility to the public. They just don't, because they don't exercise it. Here, a committee like the Intelligence Committee is co-opted by the intelligence community. The Commerce Committee is co-opted by the various interests involved.
But assuming that includes Mark Udall, why does he go through a conversion process and generate a full conscience and moral responsibility the minute he's voted out of office? Why isn't he still the same person?
I don't know. He should have had this before.
right. I'm just
both Dan Ellsberg and I wish that people would, in great profuse numbers, would leak secrets directly and not have to rely on people like Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning, who are then prosecuted because they're the messenger or WikiLeaks Assange or Edward Snowden. This is terrible that these courageous people pay a price for doing what's right in a democratic society.
Well, what would you be doing if you were in the Senate now? What would you be?
Oh God, I don't know if they'd have put me on the Intelligence Committee, but I should have been. Because I have an intelligence background, which I don't think Mark Udall has, or does Dianne Feinstein. And I think I understand the workings of the secrecy system in the government. But and that's why it was easy for me to make the decision to... Here, I'll give you a parallel that's very interesting. When I was 23 years old, I had a top secret security clearance. I could classify and declassify. And because I was the adjutant at a communications intelligence service organization where we had the CIC as our cover. And what we did, and I was a second lieutenant adjutant. And what we did in this organization was wiretap anybody we wanted to in Europe and open their mail. Of course, shades now of electronically being done by the NASA. But we were doing that back in 1952. 53, and I was right there in the middle of it. And so now I could, as 23 years old, I could classify and declassify. I am now 41 years old. I'm in the United States Senate. Nixon sends over the Pentagon Papers to the Senate. They're under armed guard, and all they can do is go in the room and read them, not take notes, under armed guard. That just gives you an element of how ridiculous the political community is in this regard. And so when Ellsberg called me during that period and he said, would I release the papers? I said, of course I would release the papers.
But he had to get you a copy and you had to handle them yourself so your staff wasn't put at risk and so forth. How does Senator Udall or any other senator or Congress member now who develops a sense of duty and justice, how do they physically get a hold of a copy of the thing?
Well, this I don't know, but I can surmise that there's got to be a reading room within a committee, and you'd all could go into the reading room and read the torture report. And I don't know if they have an armed guard. I wouldn't think they have an armed guard. He could walk in with a briefcase, and unless another member is not there, he could put the papers in a briefcase and walk out. And if a guard were outside and wanted to open his briefcase, you could tell him to go to hell. He's a United States senator, and this guy is an employee of the Senate. So he could then walk out, put his press release on the papers, and then release him in the press room. I indicated to those who are trying to contact Udall that I would be willing to go to, I was going to try to meet him in Denver, and he's not going to be there this week, but I would be willing to go to Washington or Denver and meet him at any point between now and when he leaves office and try to explain to him how he could do that and help him do it. I've got no problems doing it again.
Well, we've got a petition at a website where I work, rootsaction.org, and a dozen or more other big activist websites all working together. I think it's well over 100,000 signatures, maybe 200,000.
Add my signature, please, okay?
I don't know if I can do that, but I will certainly combine this interview with...
You are hereby authorized to add my signature. You can do it.
I appreciate that. Everyone else will have to physically go to rootsaction.org and add their signature, and we're going to deliver that to Senator Udall and to others in Washington. And I would hope that they would look to your example and follow the example you set so many years ago. But somehow it doesn't seem to be in the air in Washington these days.
Well, to put it bluntly, gutless wonders. I mean, this does not take a great deal of courage. You're talking about informing the American people over a horrible, horrible policy in their name. In their name. But because of Representative government is structured, they can't do anything about it except on Election Day. And on Election Day, there's so many other issues that determine, why you vote for somebody. But in addition to that, now we're so corrupt with the amount of money that's spent on elections that there's no way the electorate can be truly knowledgeable to act intelligently. Our democracy has really gone downhill to a great degree.
Well, I would love to have you back on this show another time to talk about public initiatives, and they seemed to do very well in this past election.
Just very simple. There's only two venues for change. One is the people, and the other is the government. But the government is where the problem exists, so you got to be able to go to the people. And the only way you can go to the people is if they're empowered to make laws like their elected officials.
Very, very well said. Former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel speaking with us on Talk Nation Radio. Mike, thank you very, very much for coming on the program.
You're welcome. I hope the gambit works to get Udall to do something.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.